from around the globe. In sold-out arenas and humble churches, from out on the streets, to your screen. And now, the time and what must be done. On this edition of Farrakhan Speaks.
Greetings and welcome to The Time and What Must Be Done, weekly broadcast by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. It is my extreme pleasure and honor, on behalf of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, to introduce part 40 entitled Guidance to Our President and Our Nation. Minister Farrakhan is preparing for next week's 18th anniversary of the historic Million Man March, the Holy Day of Atonement, in Tuskegee, Alabama, on October the 20th. As he is preparing for this great event, we would like to present to you today his message from the 17th anniversary of the Holy Day of Atonement, delivered last year in Charlotte, North Carolina. As we are witnessing the recent shutdown of the United States government, which has caused hundreds of thousands of Americans to suffer, it is reported that 800,000 federal workers were furloughed, with blacks being 18% of that workforce. National parks and museums have closed and workers laid off. Mortgages for many low to moderate income borrowers and first-time home buyers have been delayed. Vital services that seniors, veterans, women, and children need are being curtailed. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have ceased disease surveillance, and hotline calls to the National Institutes of Health are not answered. Many of the services of the government are not reaching the American people, and the National Transportation Board is not investigating most transportation accidents. And more than 2,900 Federal Aviation Administration inspectors have been furloughed. So we are witnessing a government that does not seem to be able to solve the critical problems necessary to serve the best interests of the American people. We believe the minister's words from last year in Charlotte, North Carolina, have proved to be prophetic. And so we present for your consideration again Minister Louis Farrakhan's message, Guidance to the President and Guidance to the Nation. Join me as we hear once again the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, we give Him praise and thanks for His mercy, His goodness to the members of the human family. Whenever any member of this family strays from his straight path and earns his displeasure, before he punishes, he always raises from among the people a prophet or a messenger of God to whom he gives what is called divine revelation by means of a scripture. This scripture is used by his prophet or messenger to guide those who will back to his straight path, once again earning his divine favor. We thank Allah for Moses and the Israelite prophets that gave us what is called the Old Testament. We thank Allah for Jesus and the apostles that gave to us the Injil and the New Testament. And we thank Allah for Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah, through whom Allah gave to the world his final revelation that leads us up to and through the judgment of this present world. I am a student of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I could never thank Allah enough for his merciful intervention in our affairs in the person of Master W. Farad Muhammad, the long sought after Mahdi of the Muslims and Messiah of the Christians. We thank him for his coming, and we thank him for raising up among us one to lead, teach, and guide us, one to guide America, one to warn America and the world, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. In their names, I greet all of you, my dear and wonderful brothers and sisters, with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, Assalamu alaikum. Now, you know, today I was to talk on the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's economic blueprint to fight against poverty and want. And 2 weeks ago, while I was sitting in the barber chair, a thought came to me. When we chose Charlotte to be the host of the 17th anniversary of the Million Man March, we didn't know that President Obama and the Democratic Party would have their convention here just a few weeks ahead of our arrival. And the thought came to me that maybe I should postpone that very important subject and speak on that which is more relevant, because today we face the American electorate and those who would be subjected to the results of the election just 3 weeks from now, both here and throughout the world. This election is so very, very important to so many. It's important to the extreme right that President Obama is not reelected for 4 more years. They may say that it's economics, it's about jobs. But we sense that there's a deep racial undercurrent that is found in the Republican Party respecting Brother Obama and this election. Ever since he has been elected, the Republican right, with Rush Limbaugh, Breitbart, Fox News, members of the Senate and the Congress, many in state legislatures, their whole idea has been to get this man out of the White House and nullify any policy or position that he might come up with that might bring success to his presidency and that might possibly give him a second term. It started like an undercurrent, but now it is so overtly hateful and racist in nature that it is polarizing America on the basis of race. So when we look at Mitt Romney, You see the super PACs and the intensity and commitment of those who are backing him. No matter how many blunders he may have made, nothing has stopped this march towards defeating President Obama for a second term. And on the left, you see a coalition of Black and brown and Native American, Asians, Jews, Gentiles, Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, white and black, who seem to feel that a second term for Barack Obama, since he cannot come back for another term, would give him more leverage to enact policies that would be for the long term good for the American people. But there's a problem with both views. The racist view doesn't care what Obama says or does for the benefit of America. It will always be played down. But on the other side, the vast majority of the electorate, the Democratic side, the poor, the underserved, the underclass, there is nothing that we see, even if there is a second term, that will radically alter the condition of the masses of blacks and the masses of the poor. All of the focus has been mainly on the middle class, from both sides. What happened to the poor of this nation? Who will speak for the poor? Don't the poor deserve to be recognized and represented and thought about? The scripture says that the poor heard the message of Jesus gladly. And is that the reason why the scribes, the Pharisees, and some of the Jews of that day hated him? Could it be that when you speak for the poor, the rich feel left out? The rich feel that you're troubling with that from which they get their riches. The rich people get their riches from sucking the lifeblood of the poor. So in this election, it really doesn't matter who wins. The problem that that person and those around that person have to solve is so great that if radical thought is not put before the American electorate, this nation will fail. America is at a point where radical solutions must be applied. And a key word that has been missing from the standard bearers of both parties is a word called sacrifice. Now, sacrifice means the surrender or destruction of something prized or desirable for the sake of something considered as having a higher or more pressing claim. If the problems in America are to be solved, sacrifices are going to have to be made, all the way from the rich down to the poorest of the poor. The question is, what is America willing to sacrifice? Not who. We already know that the poor are already sacrificed. But what is America willing to sacrifice? What is government willing to sacrifice to bring about fiscal responsibility that in this generation would begin to solve the problem so that the future of America might be safeguarded. What must government do? What must corporate America do in terms of sacrifice? What must labor unions do in terms of sacrifice? What must bankers do in terms of sacrifice? What must the American people do in terms of sacrifice to address the enormous debt that has now enslaved the American people and will continue to enslave future generations if this debt is not brought under control? What are you, Black America, willing to sacrifice? Because we have to make some sacrifices too. Now, you might say, I already don't have nothing. Wrong. So wrong. Last year, according to economists, they say that $1.1 trillion came through the hands of Black America. But what did we spend our money on? Where did our money go? How foolishly did we use our resources? So yes, if we're gonna come up out of poverty and want, we have to join the party and make a sacrifice of the party. Will the impatience of Americans and the unforeseen challenges of the future cause there to have to be a new government rising out of the ashes of this one? For this nation is now being sent to the depths of hell by the inordinate greed and lust for power and the wealth and resources of the peoples of the world in the hands of a few to the detriment of the many. Who do you think you are, Farrakhan, to offer guidance to America, to the world, to the president? By what right, by what authority do you attempt such? I want to make this very clear. This is our country. The possessive pronoun our. This is our country. In fact, because of the contributions that we have made to America, we have more right to say so about the future of this country, since it is we who built America. Even though we were slaves at that time. Yes, sir. What we have given to America in terms of wealth and service gives us the right to offer guidance to our nation. Now listen. Even though we've given to America a trusted relationship, that no matter how ill-treated we have been up to this moment, we have never been an enemy to this country. Never. Black people are not involved in terrorist activity. To our former slave masters and their children. Black people are not plotting evil against this nation. Even though our thoughts may be different from others, it is yet not from the position of an enemy. It is rather from the position of a true friend. We claim the unfettered right to give guidance. We claim the authority of God to give guidance. We have no other country to go to. We live here. We've suffered here. We've died here and on every foreign battlefield to preserve America for you and not necessarily for ourselves. But now we are maturing. We're rising up by God's permission from the shackles of slavery to offer guidance to the only country we have known from the best of motivations. Allah God has visited America to raise us up, not to be your worst enemy, but in spite of how badly we have been treated in the time of your greatest trouble, in the time of your greatest suffering, in the time of your greatest dilemma, we are here to offer you divine solutions to your plethora of problems. You sing it in your song. This land is your land. This land is my land. I want to say it again. This land may be your land, but this land is definitely our land. And we have every right to guide this president and anybody else who wants to lead America. We deserve the right to vote. We deserve to fight against any abridgment of that right by any scheme or machination of our former slave masters and their children. We deserve the right to elect people of our race to help lead. We deserve that our elected officials should be respected and not plotted against by a racist system that wants to keep America white. But look, America, you're dying in your whiteness. So, I mean, if you want to stay white, it's okay. But you'll just die white. Because the future of America is that we are here now. It's not a place of just white people. The whole human family lives in the borders of America. So if America really cannot open the heart and the mind and get a new attitude to receive what God has sent into these shores, then you will die, but you won't take us down with you. You will die alone. Did you not read in the scriptures that God would choose the despised and the rejected to be his people, and he would be their God? Did you not read that the stone that the builders rejected would eventually become the headstone of the corner? Did not you read that God would vex you with a foolish people and that he would search the earth for his lost sheep that would be found enslaved and robbed, blind, deaf, and dumb? Yet he would raise one to open the eyes of the blind, make the deaf hear, make the dumb speak, raise the dead to life. And this act, listen good, of opening eyes of the blind, making the deaf hear, the dumb speak, raising the dead to life, this would prove the powerful wisdom and the guidance of the God who found us and the God who now has chosen us to be a guide for you. Wait a minute, Farrakhan.
Yes, sir.
Or Farrakhan, however you want to call me. God has never selected his guides from among those whom the society had educated. He selects his guides from the meanest of the people, not mean-spirited, but meanest. And so that definition, meanest means those having little or no money, goods, or other means of support, dependent upon charity or public support, the needy, the indigent, the destitute, the penniless, the poverty-stricken, the meager, the miserable, the unhappy, and the pitiable. It is among those kind of people that God has always chosen his messengers and his prophets. Well, his pattern has not changed. The God that is prophesied to come in the last days, that has found us, has declared that the wisdom of this world is considered to be foolishness in the sight of the guidance and the wisdom that he would bring. And as we watch the debates, which I'll get into in a few minutes, we are witnessing foolishness. Absolute foolishness. But I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. So, the God said he would place that wisdom in the head and in the heart of a man who would say, quote, I thank thee, Father in heaven, for keeping these things from the wise and the prudent man and revealing them unto babes. Well, we are those babes. And I hope that you will pay good attention to what you are about to hear from the head, from the heart, and from the mouth of your former slaves. So let us begin. The Nation of Islam has been in America for 82 years. And during that time, the originator of the nation, Master Farad Muhammad, guided and warned. For 40 years, independent of his teacher, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad guided and warned. And oh, it's right there in the Holy Quran. If you would look, Moses was given 30 days. And then 10 more were added. And after 40 nights, Moses said to Aaron, take my place among the people and act well and follow not the way of the mischief makers. After 40 years, Elijah Muhammad made me his Khalifa to sit in his seat by his and God's authority to continue to teach and guide and warn a nation and a world and a sleeping people. All the way back to the beginning of my effort, with the help of many of these beautiful brothers and sisters here, to rebuild the work of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we were giving warnings to America that the problem of justice for the black man and woman is going to loom greater and greater. But the clearest warnings that were set down were given to me by God to give to George Herbert Walker Bush, as well as his son, George W. That's right. I warned them of what God had shown me, of what was in their minds. Now, stop right there. I know you are wise people, but I don't think God showed you what was in the mind of Reagan. But he showed it to me. And I didn't hold it to myself. He showed me what was in the mind of Bush. He showed me what is in the mind of Barack. You can take it or let it alone. I'm opening up everybody's mind today. Now, let's talk about some of the things that we have been guided to say over the years that have proved true. When Reverend Jackson ran to be the nominee of the Democratic Party for the presidency of the United States, he asked me and us to come by his side, which we did. At that time, I was then standing up for him against many in the Jewish community who were trying to sidetrack and destroy his bid for the presidency of the United States. And at the height of that in 84, I was invited to the National Press Club by the president of the press club. And it said here, July 30th, 1984. Listen to how they addressed it. Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, accompanied by bodyguards, addresses a sold-out, boisterous club luncheon maintaining his racist and anti-Semitic views. Club president John Fogerty says, quote, "I am proud to be president of an organization whose members and officers have the courage not to turn away from controversy." Now, at that time, they wanted to weigh Farrakhan, because this is the first time that a black man in modern history has stood up to an attack by members of the Jewish community and fought back. And the more I fought, the more you rose. see a punctified leader cannot raise up a scared to death people. I am born from a fearless leader, Elijah Muhammad. No black man, none, has ever said what Elijah said and did among us what Elijah did and never backed down. How could I say I am from that man and then not represent the fearless, courageous man and leader that he is? In 1984, we pointed out in that speech at the press club, which I hope that the final call will put up on the web site, that you may read what we said before many of you were born or were conscious, so that you will know that your brother has been consistent all the way through. I have never backed down by the grace of God. Listen, listen. I pointed out then, before the world press, that the people that we have elected to public office are no longer our representatives, but they are representatives of a corporatocracy, the oligarchy, the rich and the powerful. And because they can be bought by the lobbyists that are exercising sway in Washington, D.C., they are gradually eroding democracy for the American people. Now, I said this in 84 at the height of their calling me an anti-Semite. I have never been an anti-Semite. I just am against lying, deceiving, robbing, and raping the American people and the people of the world. In 2010, the Supreme Court, in a landmark case, sanctioned the emergence of super PACs by which corporations can spend unlimited amounts of money to buy elections. It is just unthinkable that a man would have to raise $1 billion to buy an American election. It's not substance. It's not intellect. It's not the ability to really solve the problems of America. It is who got the slickest media campaign. Because right now, you are the dumbed down American people. The wicked manipulate your ignorance. So a man like Farrakhan and my teacher, Elijah Muhammad, are hated. What have we done? I soon will be 80 years old. I never have been arrested. Not for chewing gum or spitting on the sidewalk. Best they got on Farrakhan is a heavy ankle and a speeding ticket. But what have I done that you hate me so? I rape nobody. I rob nobody. I don't have sex with little boys. I don't smoke reefer. I used to. I don't smoke crack. I don't drink liquor. I don't eat hog. What have I done? Did you hate me so? See, it's because you can't bend me, and you can't buy me, and you can't make me into your nigga. You have financiers like the oil tycoon Koch brothers, casino owner Sheldon Adelson, who have invested tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to buy elections and buy the person that gets elected. I was interviewed by CNN in 1997 after I was blessed by God to survive a 14-hour operation where the cancer that I had and the radiation that they gave me was designed to kill me.
That's right.
So they took out half of my insides.
That's
right. Yes. Yes. A complete pelvic exoneration. But while I was under the knife, or just before, I sent for, what's brother's name?
Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey.
It's 2007.
2007. He flew in and looked at me on a gurney, tears in his eyes. I said, look, brother, I need you to just tell the people to come to Detroit for Savior's Day. He said, what? Now, I'm about to go under the knife. People thought I was not gonna make it, and I'm telling him, tell the people that I'll be there. The doctor who was operating on me, I said, can you get me ready for Savior's Day? He said, look, Farrakhan, don't sweat us. We're just trying to get through this operation. The operation ended, I think, on the night of the 4th of January, 2007. And by February 26th, I was in Detroit speaking for 2 hours to those who came very much alive. When Allah got something for you to do, death has to go on back and wait till God gets ready to call me in, and he's not ready yet. So they asked me on CNN, what do you think about this young man? Barack Obama, who was running then for the office. I said, quote, he's a young man with fresh ideas that could be good for the country. And then I said, but I am under no illusion that he's going to be able to accomplish what he has in his heart to do. And after he got elected, I gave a lecture in Chicago at our headquarters, where I warned America that he reminded me of the she-camel in the story of the history of Salih and the people of Hud in Arabia. This she-camel, camels are unique creatures. They can get you across the desert without taking a drink. Their lashes on their eyes, well, some of you get these little eyelash things, you know. And you do resemble a camel. Oh, no, 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 no. No, no. No, I didn't mean it in a pejorative sense. I meant that the eyelashes of the camel come out and turn up, and it allows the camel to go through the dust storms that are in the desert to get their rider from point A to point B. And I said to the American electorate that Barack Obama reminds me of that camel.
Yes.
That God told the wicked in that day, do not harm or hamstring this camel. And I said to the American electorate, leave Obama alone.
Yes, sir, you did.
Because if you leave him alone and help him, he can get you across the desert. Now listen to this. But the wicked in the time of the prophet Salih and the people of Hud hamstrung the she-camel. Now let's see what America did to Obama. Y'all all right? Just hang with me, I ain't got nothing but time. I know them seats may be a little hard, but you know, we in the nation, we always hug each other and give each other cheek to cheek. Just cheek to cheek, you'll make it. You know, it's always good for a little levity when the subject matter is so tough, because it's going to get more rough as we go down the road. Listen, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who said, listen to his words, the single most important thing we want to achieve is for President Obama to be a one-term president. Now listen, what kind of self-interest is this? If the majority of the American people voted for this man, the Electoral College agreed with the popular vote, why would you want to go against the popular vote, the Electoral College, and against a man who is trying to fight for the good, not of some, but of the whole? Why would you say you want him to fail? And if he fails, what is the result for you? What is it that has blinded you, Republicans? It is race. And your hatred of a black man rising after you thought you had destroyed us totally. Now we are rising, and no power in the heavens above or in the earth beneath can stop the rise of the black man and woman of America, the Caribbean, Central South America, Africa, and the Isles of the Pacific. We are on the rise, and there is no turning back. We are rising, and it is blinding you, your hatred, the good that we could do for the country. So you purposely hamstrung that man. And your aim was not only that he would be unsuccessful, but if he had any success, you would do all in your power to limit its effect. Now let's listen to this. According to the New York Times writer Robert Draper, in a book titled, Do Not Ask What Good We Do, by Robert Draper. On the night of Obama's inauguration, the Republicans met and plotted ways to win back political power. I want you to listen. All that I'm saying to you is fact. And they met to put the brakes on Obama's legislative platform. The meeting lasted for 4 hours. And about 15 ruffians, the Masons and Shriners that are here, they know what I'm talking about. Members of the House of Representatives met and three of them, isn't that interesting? Eric Cantor from Virginia, Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, and Newt Gingrich. They agreed to go after Timothy Geithner and to show united and unyielding opposition to the president's economic policies. Their job was to jab Obama relentlessly in 2011, so that they would win the White House and the Senate in 2012. This is a quote. You will remember this day, reports Draper, Newt Gingrich, as saying on the way out of the meeting. You'll remember this day as the day the seeds of 2012 were sown. You remember this day because their intention was to destroy his presidency. Well, I do want you, Mr. Gingrich, Mr. Ryan, Mr. Cantor, and the other ruffians that were with you. I want you to remember that day. Because on that day, you sowed the seeds of the destruction of the United States of America. Take it or let it alone. I'm just saying, I'm going to prove it. I got some lawyers in the house. They're watching to see how we present the case. You don't know how happy I am to be in Charlotte. Now, you may not have known this, those of you who are 17 years, or rather 10 years old, or even 20 years old. When 9/11 happened, which was September the 11th, 2001, we held a press conference at Mosque Mariam 5 days later, where I was guided to say that this so-called war on terror is really a war against Islam. I want you to put my press conference up so that the world can see what I said 5 days after, and it made more sense than what any American leader or religious leader said. Go read it for yourself. God has raised a guide for you.
Please log on again next week and every week this year for The Time and What Must Be Done. Tell your friends, tell your family. Log on to NOI.org every Saturday, 6 p.m. Central Time, for truth, guidance, and unequaled love from the National Representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Pass on the word every Saturday at 6 p.m. Central Time at NOI.org. The Time and What Must Be Done. Remember, to have Minister Farrakhan answer your questions, tweet them to @LouisFarrakhan, #AskFarrakhan. And to add this message to your library or as a gift for someone you love, go to store.finalcall.com.